So, I have a cell phone. Any of you have a cell phone? Yes, we all have cell phones now. And that means that the news continually comes on my cell phone. So like 3 times a day, usually, I'm looking at the news, reading more news than I ever read before. And some of it is really very moving and very overwhelming. This past week, I read a story from a woman in Syria. Her city, Ghouta, is under siege and attack. She wrote about how she and the other women and their children had spent the night in a bomb shelter, how the bombs were coming down around them, how the men were also in another shelter, how they didn't have any food, how the children were hysterical and screaming, how it was very tight and dark and damp in there, how frightening it was. And then she wrote as her role in this town had been to be a contact for women. And 2 months ago, she wrote, the United Nations had come in, and they had sent 4,000 baskets of food for 28,000 families. And so she had met with the people from the United Nations. And this is what she said to them. She said, "You are not helping us. So let me help you. Your United Nations Charter reads that you believe in the dignity and worth of the human person, and that everyone has a right to a standard of living, including food to eat. Well, the 4,000 baskets of food you sent is not enough for 28,000 families. It is pathetic. We are not dying here to make you look good. We are dying because you are not living up to your charter." This woman turned the tables. She refused to be the problem. Instead, she said, "Those in the world that are looking the other way are the problem." Another story I read this week, where, again, our students, high school students in Florida who faced the unthinkable tragedy at their school, they also are holding up a mirror for all of us. In their strong voices, they said, "You adults have failed us. You have not created a safe place for us to go to school." They said, "Guns kill people." And one of them asked the senator from Florida, "Senator, can you tell me right now that you will not accept a single donation from the NRA in the future?" To say that he looked uncomfortable would be an understatement. The students have also turned the tables. They are refusing to be the victims subject to the fearfulness or apathy of the adults around them. If we're not going to do it, they're going to make the change themselves. And we all know in the past year, we have had the women in the hashtag MeToo movement telling us for centuries, women in every walk of life have suffered harassment at the power of abusive men over them. From those abducted into the sex trade, to those abused on the internet, to women farm workers, refugees, political aides, employees, spouses of abusers, we all know that it has gone on and on and on. And now women have had enough. They have spoken out, banded together, brought legal action, and exposed their abusers. They have turned the tables. They are refusing to be the cowering victims and have instead sent the perpetrators running for cover. What's going on? What's giving all of these people the power to speak up? These people are angry. They are angry at the injustice and the outrageous behavior in the world, and they are refusing to be silent. This is the kind of anger that Jesus expresses in the gospel today. What? Jesus is angry? I have never seen a single statue in any church of Jesus being angry. How could that be? Jesus gets angry. And sure enough, in today's reading, he's madder than hell. He's outraged. He will not have the temple, the house of God, be a place that manipulates and cheats the poor. He will not allow it to be a place that sets itself up as the arbitrator of who has access to God and who does not. Because the people coming to the temple are required to bring a sacrifice. And so the vendors have thought, this is a perfect opportunity. We will sell these sacrificial doves and oxen and sheep right in the courtyard of the temple. They'll have to buy it from us. We'll change their money. Of course, we'll take a profit when we do that. We'll take a profit when we sell everything. We're going to make a lot of money off of these people. And Jesus says, oh, no, that's not what we're going to do. And so he will speak up. He will show that everyone can have access to God and that those who try to prevent that will be driven out. He will reject the idea that some are worthier or holier than others. He will turn the tables. And in fact, he will literally turn the tables. He will go into the temple and he will throw the tables upside down. Scatter the money, scatter the goods. He drives the animals out of the temple and the vendors along with them and the doves the birds have to go to. He is there to teach them that God is personal and lives here within their hearts, not in a physical building. In fact, he says he will destroy the building and it will rise up in 3 days. And they say, what? What are you talking about? He's talking about where God really lives, which is within our hearts. The building is really irrelevant. It's what's happening right here. And God is available everywhere. And our access to God cannot be limited by how much money we have or whether we have the right dove or bird, our economies or our nations or even our religion. So here's something for us to learn about anger. What does it look like when Jesus is angry? Anger is a sign of what we are feeling. They say sometimes it's a secondary emotion. It comes because of another feeling that we have, which might be outrage, might be frustration, rejection, pain, fear, or even hunger. And sometimes the work of dealing with those feelings is our inner work to do and personal work. We might do it with the help of a friend or a therapist, a priest, an AA group. Sometimes that work is for us to do. But sometimes that work is all of our work to do together. And therefore, it must be expressed out loud in order for us to come together to do it. So how does Jesus express his anger? He expresses his anger intentionally with emotion that matches the depth of his outrage. Jesus just didn't walk into the temple for the first time and see this happening and just blow up. No, he was very aware of what was happening. He's intentional in his anger. He came in ready to do a demonstration. He turns over the tables. He drives out those who don't belong. He shouts. He waves his arms. His eyes are on fire. But Jesus is not violent. No one is hurt in this demonstration of anger. His anger is managed and purposeful. He knows what it means to be human. He tells us that in the passage. He knows what it means to feel anger, to be outraged. For those of us who are parents, we know that there are times when we must, as a parent, express our anger. Why do we need to do that? Because our emotions and behavior need to be congruent with the significance of the situations that we find ourselves in with our children. If I'm never angry or upset as a mother, then I really haven't demonstrated the importance of certain things. If something is outrageous, shouldn't I be outraged? When I talk about expressing anger as a parent, I'm not talking about being violent. I'm not talking about hitting or spanking your child or demeaning them in any way, or even just yelling with criticism every day. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when we have serious situations with our children, that the tone of my voice, the expression on my face, the actions of my body say to them, this is important. This is going to change. We are going to do something about this. And that those things are important things. Bullying, for example, or cheating, or using drugs, or racism. These things are important enough for us to be outraged and for our children to know that we're outraged about it. Shootings in schools. Some of us need to learn how to express our outrage and to stop hiding behind our silence. And that can be for many reasons. It can be from the way we were raised. I certainly was not raised to express anger. I was raised to smile through everything, no matter what. Smile through it. And so I had to learn how to express my anger or my outrage. It's an important emotion. It's an important emotion for communicating to each other what's important to us in this world. That said, when you take a stand against injustice, you can expect consequences. So you need to be prepared for that. You may, for example, be put in jail, like Susan B. Anthony. You might be rejected by your friends if you, for example, demanded that transgendered people should have access to bathrooms. You might lose your career if you fight sexual harassment. You might be ridiculed by the NRA if you demand safe gun laws. Like Father John Deere, you might lose your position as a pastor for protesting the war. Or you might simply be written off as part of a group of spoiled millennials, or whining women, or angry black men, or terrorist refugees, or whatever term can be used to alienate people against you. But when you take that stand for justice, your heart and your voice will be one. And that only happens when you are in tune with our Creator, when the fear is gone and the love is strong. And you know deep within you that, like Jesus, you have only one purpose here on earth: to perfect your understanding of love. That's the goal. That's the goal of our lifetimes, to learn how to love and to be loved. There are many people, as you know, that have had what they call near-death experiences, where their body actually physically dies and then comes back to life. And these people have given us a glimpse of the afterlife and their stories of what's happened. And over and over and over again, they tell us that they were in the presence of great love. Some people describe it as a light, different images. But they felt great love, no guilt, no shame, no diminishment, just overwhelming love. But they also tell us that they felt a sense of deep responsibility for what they did or didn't do in their lifetime. It's as though God holds up a mirror and we see the life that we lived for 20 or 40 or 80 or more years. We see the times that perhaps we didn't love, or that we didn't take time to serve others, or that we didn't stop to care about those who were suffering. And if that's true, then when our time comes, we also will feel the deep responsibility. And we will ask ourselves, how did I miss my chance? Why didn't I step up for that? Through it all, we know that God will love us. That will never change. And guide us, for that is exactly who God is. God can hold everything, can hold our strengths, and also can hold our weaknesses. God's arms are so big. But we don't need to wait for our death to experience that. For God is holding us right now, today. We can grow right now. We can realize that the Spirit of God is already dwelling within us, each one of us. We have only to awaken to its presence and unleash the Spirit that will not be afraid, not afraid to love, to speak out, to make changes, and to take on unbelievable challenges. Because with God, all things are possible. Our job is only to remember that.